Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
Israel's decision to evacuate 1 million Gazans is basically forcible transfer. That is a war crime under international law. On the other hand, it's completely unimplementable. The United Nations is calling it horrendous.
Last night, the Israeli army ordered 1.1 million residents of Gaza to evacuate their homes within 24 hours and flee south, in what many Palestinians fear is the start of a second Nakba. The UN said the mass transfer of half of Gaza's population, including all of Gaza City and the hospital as well, would have, quote, devastating humanitarian consequences. We'll go to Gaza for the latest, as Israel's bombardment is now in its seventh day. We'll also look at how the Biden administration's increasing military and diplomatic support for Israel, even though human rights groups warn Israel is committing war crimes in Gaza.
The message that I bring to Israel is this. You may be strong enough on your own to defend yourself, but as long as America exists, you will never, ever have to. We will always be there by your side.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Israel's army has ordered 1.1 million civilians in the northern Gaza Strip to evacuate southwards within just 24 hours from last night, an order the United Nations called impossible without devastating humanitarian consequences. The ultimatum came as Israel massed troops, tanks and armored vehicles in southern Israel for a widely anticipated ground invasion of Gaza. On Friday, Israel dropped thousands of leaflets across the Gaza Strip, warning Palestinians to leave their homes or risk death. The Norwegian Refugee Council condemned what it called the collective punishment of countless civilians, among them children, women and the elderly, which it said would amount to the war crime of forcible transfer, unquote. Israel's ultimatum came as its unrelenting bombardment of Gaza continued for a seventh day. This is 14-year-old Janan Alatar, whose uncle was killed and whose family was left homeless by Israeli airstrikes.
It was my sister's wedding, and we were making sweets when the airstrike started. So we left the house. We were packed on top of each other in the car, and we drove directly to the school here. But living in the school is not nice. And my uncle went back to the house, and they bombed it while he was there, and he was killed.
Health officials in Gaza say at least 1,500 Palestinians have been killed by Israeli strikes, including 500 children. Israel reports it dropped 6,000 bombs on Gaza during the first 6 days of the assault. Hospitals are overwhelmed with the wounded and dead and increasingly rationing fuel to operate life-saving medical equipment. Human Rights Watch has confirmed reports of Israel firing white phosphorus munitions during attacks on Gaza and along its border with Lebanon. White phosphorus poses a high risk of excruciating burns and lifelong suffering. Its use as an incendiary weapon in civilian areas is a war crime. Israel denies using white phosphorus. Israel previously used white phosphorus in attacks on the Gaza Strip, including in 2009. Thousands of residents of southern Lebanon have fled their homes near Israel's border amidst fears that cross-border skirmishes between Israel and Lebanese militants could escalate into a war. The exodus continued Thursday as Iran's foreign minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian traveled to Beirut, where he met with Hezbollah leader Hassan Nasrallah. Iran has warned the war risks spreading to other fronts if Israel keeps bombing Gaza. Hamas's armed wing, the Al-Qassam Brigade, says 13 of the hostages it took during its weekend attack in southern Israel were killed by Israeli strikes on Gaza over the past day. Meanwhile, Israeli relatives of those slain and kidnapped by Hamas are reeling from the ongoing tragedies. This is Anat Moshe Shoshani, whose grandfather was killed and grandmother taken hostage by Hamas during a raid on their home at their Nir Oz kibbutz.
She's a 72-year-old woman. She's sick. She has heart issues. She watched her husband die right in front of her. And right after, they got her on the motorcycle. And she had to hold the terrorist that just murdered her husband. They were together for over 50 years. They built the kibbutz with their own hands.
Hamas has killed over 1,300 Israelis and taken about 150 hostages. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken visited Jordan today for talks with King Abdullah and Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas. Blinken will also visit Qatar, Bahrain, Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, and Egypt over the weekend as he looks to secure the immediate release of hostages held by Hamas. His trip came after U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin said the Pentagon is not placing any conditions on its weapons shipments to Israel.
This is a professional military led by professional leadership, and we would hope and expect that they would do the right things in the prosecution of their campaign.
Austin spoke Thursday from NATO headquarters in Brussels. Today, he's in Tel Aviv, where he pledged ironclad U.S. support for Israel during a press conference with Defense Minister Yoav Gallant. The French government has banned all rallies in response to the Israeli bombardment and total blockade of Gaza. On Thursday, police in Paris used tear gas and water cannons against pro-Palestine protesters who gathered despite the prohibition.
Unfortunately, we were not able to protest properly because the demonstration was banned, while those in favor of the Israeli cause were authorized. This is not normal under the rule of law.
In the United Kingdom, activists have vowed to take legal action if officials ban the Palestinian flag. British Home Secretary Suella Braverman has urged police forces to use the full force of the law against protesters waving the Palestinian flag, which she said may not be legitimate if it's found to be a sign in support of, quote, terrorism. In Australia, human rights defenders are warning of the government's escalating repression against actions in support of Palestine. New South Wales Acting Police Commissioner Dave Hudson said officers won't need a reasonable cause to search protesters who attend marches planned in Sydney this weekend.
I urge people considering entering the city on Sunday to reconsider. There are a number of peaceful alternatives for people to voice their opinion in relation to the conflict that's currently going on in Israel and Gaza.
Here in New York, Columbia University closed its campus to the public Thursday in response to two separate demonstrations led by pro-Palestine and pro-Israel student groups. In Massachusetts, the names and photos of several Harvard students who signed a pro-Palestinian letter were displayed on a billboard truck on campus Wednesday with a banner that read, "Harvard's leading anti-Semites." Some of their names and personal information were also posted online. They were doxed. That action was organized by the ultra-conservative nonprofit Accuracy in Media. The U.S. House of Representatives remains without a speaker. On Thursday, Republican Congressmember Steve Scalise dropped out of the race to replace the ousted Speaker Kevin McCarthy after 16 Republicans said they would not vote for Scalise. Supporters of Ohio Congressman Jim Jordan are rallying to shift their party's support to Jordan, who founded the far-right House Freedom Caucus and currently chairs the Judiciary Committee. White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre addressed the congressional turmoil Thursday.
What we're seeing is certainly shambolic chaos that we're seeing over there on the other side of Pennsylvania Avenue, and they need to get their act together. There's a lot of work that needs to be done on behalf of the American people.
It looks like former House Speaker Kevin McCarthy is also back in the running for his old seat. House legislative business is at a standstill until a new speaker is elected. This includes a bill to keep the government open beyond November 17th and military funding for Israel and Ukraine. Prosecutors have announced an additional corruption charge against New Jersey Democratic Senator Bob Menendez and his wife, Nadine. The superseding indictment accuses the couple of conspiring to have the senator act as an unregistered agent of the Egyptian government while Menendez was chair of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. The indictments allege Menendez worked to aid Egyptian officials by ghostwriting a letter to fellow senators urging they lift a hold on $300 million of U.S. military aid to Egypt. Menendez is also accused of passing along classified information to Egyptian officials, including details about employees at the U.S. Embassy in Egypt. In Colorado, an Aurora jury convicted police officer Randy Redima of criminally negligent homicide while acquitting officer Jason Rosenblatt in the 2019 killing of Elijah McClain. 23-year-old McClain, a black man, was walking home from a store when he was tackled by police, placed in a carotid hold, and later injected with a powerful sedative ketamine. Elijah's outraged mother, Shanine McClain, told reporters as she left the courtroom, quote, "This is the divided states of America, and that's what happens," unquote. Sentencing for Redima, scheduled for January, faces up to 3 years in prison. A third officer and two paramedics have also been charged and are awaiting trial. And talks between striking actors and Hollywood studios have been suspended as the two parties remain at loggerheads. SAG-AFTRA said it was presented with an offer that was, quote, shockingly worthless than they proposed before the strike began, unquote. Unionized actors said they will continue fighting for a fair contract despite the setback. This is negotiating committee member Jason George.
Look, we're storytellers, so this is the part of the movie where the hero gets knocked down and you think they're out. And this is the part where you double down and you come back and win the day. We all know that and we all believe that in our hearts. So, look, we're actors. We get rejected multiple times a day. We get rejected for stuff we didn't even know we were up for. So our ability to withstand rejection, to withstand adversity, and to stay resilient is more than I would say virtually anybody else in this town.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We begin today's show in Gaza, where Israel last night ordered the evacuation within 24 hours of all Palestinians living in the northern Gaza Strip, some 1.1 million people within 24 hours. The United Nations has condemned the order, saying it's, quote, impossible for such a movement to take place without devastating humanitarian consequences, unquote. Much of Gaza's already in the dark as Israel's cut off energy, food and water supplies. The 7-day Israeli bombardment has killed at least 1,500 Palestinians. Israel declared war after Saturday's surprise brutal attack by Hamas militants on Israel, where the death toll has reached 1,300. Israel's now amassing tanks on the border of Gaza ahead of what appears to be an imminent ground invasion. Some 400,000 Palestinians had already been displaced prior to Israel's evacuation order last night. Some groups have announced plans to defy Israel's order. The Palestinian Red Crescent Society said, quote, despite the occupation's threats to shell, the decision has been made. We did and will not leave. Our medics will carry on their humanitarian duties. We won't leave people face death alone, unquote. Many in Gaza fear Israel's evacuation order is the start of a second Nakba. 75 years ago in 1948, some 700,000 Palestinians fled from or were violently expelled from their homes upon Israel's founding in 1948. Much of Gaza's population are refugees from families displaced 75 years ago. We begin today's show with Mohammed Shahada, a writer and analyst from Gaza, chief communications at Euro-Mediterranean Human Rights Monitor, columnist at the Forward newspaper, Jewish Weekly in New York. He's joining us from Copenhagen. Mohammed, welcome to Democracy Now! Can you describe what's happening on the ground and first respond to this order from the Israeli government that half the population of Gaza, 1.1 million people, must leave the north and head south? And they gave them 24 hours last night to do it.
Yes, thanks, Amy. I've been through at least six Israeli military operations or even more. This is like nothing I've ever seen in my entire life and nothing like Gaza has ever seen in terms of magnitude, scale, level of destruction and death. Entire neighborhoods are totally unrecognizable. With the evacuation orders, it's basically plain and very obvious forcible transfers. And it's Most important thing about it is that it's unimplementable. If you know Gaza geographically and physically and the devastation of infrastructure there, you would know that most roads are broken. There's vast electricity, internet outages. People are not getting any news. At the same time, the area that Israel wants people to go out of is the most densely populated part of Gaza and the area with the most safe shelters, these UN schools, although not very safe because Israel bombed a lot of them in over the last 6 days. But it's the area with the most UN schools. It's the area with the most hospitals. And right now you have over 7,000 Palestinians wounded in Al-Shifa Hospital and other hospitals around Gaza, around the area that Israel wants them to evacuate from. So by the mere act of evacuation, many people are going to lose their lives. The other issue is that there are not enough houses, not enough spaces or shelter in the south of Gaza that Israel wants to push people towards to be in. The only realistic outcome of this is that we're going to have people just literally baking in the sun in 30 degrees Celsius temperature, about 85 degrees Fahrenheit, daily in the sun, in the street, without any access to hospitals, any access to food or water, let alone the sheer terror of Palestinians experiencing a second Nakba. Many people there are saying, we're not leaving our homes. The Palestinian Red Crescent said, we refuse to evacuate because we're not going to let our people face death alone. At the same time, I'm aware that there is some pressure from European officials and the Israeli government discreetly to sort of backtrack this decision, but they are telling me quite obviously that it's unlikely they would have much influence on Israel without the U.S. coming on board. And until now, the Biden administration hasn't made its mind up about an event that's way, way more horrendous than the Palestinian Nakba. You're talking almost about double the amount of Palestinians that were displaced in 1948, just gone in 24 hours.
We've been trying to reach guests in Gaza, and we're not able to make any connection at this point. Mohammed Shahada, if you could explain more the conditions on the ground and the significance, as I listened last night to the general director of the Palestine Red Crescent Society say, how do we move people out of hospitals with this short amount of time, not to mention more than a million people?
Yes, so before the evacuation orders, almost everyone I know in Gaza, they say our knees cannot lift us up. They haven't had any sleep for more than 2 to 3 hours a night, punctuated by constant military airstrikes, because Israel dropped up until yesterday about 6,000 bombs on Gaza in 6 days. That's about a bomb every 1.5 minutes. Every single neighborhood in Gaza was damaged. Every single street area, all the famous sites are completely gone. Pulverized. At the same time, the last time I talked to people was this morning. I talked to at least 2 to 3 people, and I lost them as I was talking with them on the line because of airstrikes or running out of electricity and internet. Israel bombed Gaza's main telecommunication company on the 3rd or 4th day of this escalation, bombed it completely, leading to outages in vast areas of Gaza. And the last time I talked to someone, the last one I spoke to is a Gazan Irish citizen. He holds Irish citizenship, European. And he was telling me basically this: I only have a few liters of water in my home for a family of 6. I don't know where am I going to go. I have a few batteries and they're running out of power. And he doesn't know if he's going to stay alive. Most people I know in Gaza are literally uploading their wills and last words to their social media accounts and begging for forgiveness from anyone that they've ever wronged or done anything to and saying, please forgive us and we forgive you as well. This is what it has come down to.
Former Israeli Prime Minister Naftali Bennett exploded at a Sky News anchor, Kamali Melbourne, during an interview Thursday after Melbourne pressed Bennett on Israel's attacks on Palestinian civilians. Here's a portion of the exchange.
What about those Palestinians in hospital who are on life support and babies and incubators whose life support and incubator will have to be turned off because the Israelis have cut the power to Gaza?
Are you seriously keep on asking me about Palestinian civilians? What's wrong with you? Have you not seen what happened? We're fighting Nazis. We don't target them. Now, the world can come and bring them anything they want. If you want to bring them electricity, I'm not going to feed electricity or water to my enemies. If anyone else wants, that's fine. We're not responsible
this is,
for them.
This is the point.
But you
this
keep
is
on.
Point.
You, no, no, Mr. Bennett, I want to tell you. No, no, listen.
Listen,
you listen
you're
to
raising
me right
your
now.
Voice, and
I've
we're
heard
trying...
you enough.
No, no, I understand. We're trying to have a conversation here. Listen, this
no,
is my program. This is my show. And I am asking the questions.
Exactly.
You're raising your voice.
Yeah,
and
country.
I've asked you. And we've already. We've already stopped, please. And let me finish. We've already distinguished between Hamas.
I want to tell you, you shame on you.
You're trying to speak over me.
We are not. Shame on you.
It's nothing about shame. We're trying to have a conversation about a very serious situation here. And you are refusing to address it.
That's Sky News anchor, Melbourne, challenging the former Israeli Prime Minister Naftali Bennett, who said to him, "You're daring to ask me about Palestinian civilians?" Mohammed Shahada, your response.
Well, I'm afraid that this is now becoming a mainstream sentiment in Israel, and not just in Israel, amongst official European and American leaders. And in the media as well, if you've been looking at what Israeli politicians are saying, about 2 days ago, an Israeli lawmaker, senior one in the ruling coalition, Limor Son Har Melech, she wrote on Twitter saying, quote, "There are no innocents in Gaza, flatten Gaza," quite literally, very openly. Now we have the architect, the godfather of the Israeli judicial coup or judicial overhaul, Simcha Rotman, he's now saying that the main goal of this operation is that a Jewish kid can walk freely in Gaza alone, if there would be a Gaza at all. So this sentiment is shared widely. But what I find most striking are two things. Number one, European diplomats in the occupied territories are telling me that their leaders, their bosses, their foreign ministries, for the last at least 5 to 6 days, were not bringing Gaza up to their Israeli counterparts at all. That's the same with the U.S. government. They're not bringing what's Israel's conduct in Gaza at all, aside from the issue of the humanitarian corridor. This might change now with the forcible transfer of 1.1 million people. But at the same time, this level of complicitness I've never seen before. And it's the same with mainstream media. I've seen circulation of allegations that were completely debunked of extreme, horrendous atrocities like mass rapes and decapitation of babies being taken at face value by virtually all the mainstream media circulating immediately and without the slightest work of journalistic integrity or investigation, although it was later debunked. And at the same time, when we have Human Rights Watch coming out yesterday and saying we have solid evidence of Israel using phosphorus munition on Gaza's civilian population, that's a chemical incendiary weapon that burns on immediate and ignites on immediate impact with oxygen, and it burns flesh and bone, and it cannot be turned off, and the toxic fumes of it can be lethal and can cause permanent respiratory damage. Human Rights Watch says Israel is using it. This is a war crime, and virtually not a single mainstream media is picking up and reporting on this. So it's unimaginable, the level of complicitness that I see in this round of escalation. Nobody is calling for de-escalation or ceasefire, not even a humanitarian ceasefire. Although they did that in the last major war on Gaza, 2014, that was the United Nations and the U.S., they had a humanitarian ceasefire for 72 hours. But this time, there's not even any talk about it, not even a thought for it. And that I find most frightening. I get a lot of questions from my colleagues, family, and people I love in Gaza asking, are we going to stay alive? One of my friends, she says, I just gave birth about a month ago. My baby is clinging to me. I'm afraid if he's going to die from a heart attack from the airstrikes and fear and terror. At the same time, that she's afraid that her husband might get killed or taken away from her if there is a ground invasion. At the same time, that she's afraid that she's going to end up permanently a refugee in the Sinai desert. These things are unimaginable horrors that are inflicted on Gaza right now with no one intervening to stop it. This is pure madness.
On CNN last night, his former military Israeli analyst said it, our goal isn't turning Gaza City into a parking lot. Our goal is to turn Gaza into a Hamas-less region. Mohammed Shahada, if you can respond in this last answer.
Yeah, exactly. As I said, Israeli leaders, politicians, and members of the ruling coalition are openly admitting that the goal is flattening Gaza. Simcha Rotman, that's, as I said, he's the architect, the chief architect of the Israeli judicial overhaul. He's one of the top lawmakers in the Israeli ruling coalition. And he's saying openly, the goal is that a Jewish Israeli kid can walk in and out freely if there would be a Gaza at all. He's admitting it very openly. And I've seen the sentiment not just from Israeli politicians, but from Israeli media as well, from Israeli pundits, analysts, and commentators. Voices of reason in Israel are now becoming a shunned minority. Many of them are afraid to speak up because now the atmosphere is so hostile, so polarized and toxic and dehumanizing for people in Gaza that whenever Gaza is brought up, the only thing that's brought up with it is Nazis. Can you imagine if any person in Gaza would refer to Israel as such, how many condemnations would be poured on their heads immediately?
Mohammed Shahada, I want to thank you so much for being with us, usually based in Palestine, in Gaza, writer and analyst, chief communications at Euro-Mediterranean Human Rights Monitor, columnist for the Forward newspaper, Jewish Weekly, here in New York. As we turn right now to Svenkin Ben Beresdorf, a former EU European Union ambassador to the occupied Palestinian territory, served in that post up until July. Your response to this order by the Israeli military that half the population of Gaza must move within a 24-hour period starting last night from the north to the south. Svenkin Ben Beresdorf.
Yeah, thank you, Ms. Goodman. And of course, I can fully second what Mohammed Shahada has so well described as the absolute catastrophe which 2 million Gazans are facing. Let me start by saying I'm fully aware of this deep hate and frustration and despair which befell the Israeli society. And when they speak of their 9/11, of what happened last Saturday, I understand, of course, that view and that emotional tension they are under right now. And that makes it so difficult to have a rational discussion, not only in Israel, but also in Europe and in the US. But we have to be aware that we still are governed by international law. We have left the medieval times. We have rules of conduct for war. We have rules of conduct of how apply humanitarian principles. And no matter what Hamas did, it does not justify the incredible use of lethal force without distinction and without proportionality as far as the Palestinian population is concerned in Gaza. Distinction, proportionality, and precaution are sacrosanct principles for the code of conduct of armed hostilities. And Israel, as a democracy, cannot escape that and has to be held accountable. It cannot be that Israel has a carte blanche because terrible acts, brutal, gruesome acts, happened to 1,000 or even 1,200 Israelis. That is not the excuse you can use to flatten Gaza. And let me come back to the point of what you exactly ask. The announcement of the IDF to basically forcibly evict more than 1 million Gazans from their homes in the northern part of the Strip is likely to be criticized by international legal experts as a war crime. If there is no provision made for ensuring humanitarian access and exit and the necessary facilities to accommodate the basic human rights to water, energy, food, and physical safety, let alone health. And this is also clearly signed in all international conventions Israel has ratified and is accountable to. So it is inexcusable if the international community does not use its pressure point to hold Israel to account to what they have pledged before the international community to respect. I understand the emotions. They are very high right now in Israel. I'm in retirement right now in France, so I'm not more on the post. But I can understand that. But as I said, we all have to uphold international law, international humanitarian law, and international human rights law. That is the yardstick. That is the most important measure of conduct for all of us.
I want to turn to Ursula Gertrude von der Leyen, the president of the European Commission, who arrived in Israel today and played for you a comment she made last year about Russia targeting civilian infrastructure in Ukraine.
War crimes, targeted attacks on civilian infrastructure with a clear aim to cut off men, women,